Hi everyone, Sarah Kato here, and this is the sixth episode already of Stay Positive, Get Excited. Hope everybody had a good Valentine's Day and President's Day and all the days and a good long weekend. I actually went to California Adventure yesterday, so I'm really tired. My calves are sore. I mean, it was a lot of fun, but man, lots of walking. Do I walk ever? Not really. But when I'm at California Adventure, I'll make an exception, you know? I know I always say I'm very excited about the guests, but in particular, this is one of the first guests I've had on who's like an older friend of mine. I think guests in the past are often acquaintances for maybe about a couple years I've known them, but this guy, I won't spoil his name yet. This guy I've known since before I went to college, and then we went to college together. So we've known each other for like 7 years. Isn't that crazy? Maybe a little under, but he's great. Also, what's cool about this guest is, see, most of my guests have been in entertainment or comedy or comedians or, you know, somewhere in that realm. This guy, he works in environmental advocacy, policy, research, all the great things that help us live on this earth, even though some resources are running out. So that's a little scary. We talk about it. We get into it, you know, and then we talk about how to stay positive among it all. He's also very active in getting folks to register to vote, which is so important in the U.S. specifically. He has a nonprofit called Plus One. Maybe it is being rebranded soon, but if you aren't familiar with it, basically this past midterm election, which is when we kind of recorded this, was a little after that. This past midterm election started a campaign to get everybody to bring like a plus one to the polls and make sure that person's registered to vote, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's just, you know, obviously doing the hard work to make sure that our democracy is a democracy and that people, especially young people, get out to vote. So that's exciting and very pertinent. And now that 2020 election stuff is actually in the news, get excited. Again, we recorded this a little bit ago, so there's some like midterm election references, things that are probably going to be like, wait a second, that didn't happen recently. But don't worry, it's all still relevant. So without further ado, this is my interview with my really good friend, Saad Amer. Enjoy. Hi, Saad.
Hello,
thanks for coming
Sierra.
On the podcast. So I guess I'll start off. This is Saad Amer.
That's
he
me.
Is an environmental scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I mean, doing all sorts of things. I don't know. I mean, I wanted to specifically talk about your work with Nonprofit Plus One,
yes.
Which just had a big election.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, everybody had a big election, but specifically that. But I mean, you're an all-around awesome person, and
couldn't
obviously we've known each other for a long time, so
yes.
I'm so excited that you came to visit me here, and then now you can be on the podcast. So yeah, cool.
Boom.
Do you want to start off by talking about your work with Plus One a little bit?
Yes.
Okay.
So I founded Plus One, which is a nonprofit organization. And actually, the goal of the entire thing was really simple. It's when you go to vote, bring a plus one. Super
wow.
simple. Wow, so complicated.
Oh my God.
And the
beautiful.
Idea,
uh-huh.
right? And
it's
the
like
idea.
A wedding.
I mean, we're getting married to this government for quite some time.
Oh,
so let's see if we can divorce them, right? And the idea there was, you know, a lot of the messaging around voting was kind of like, oh, go vote. Voting is important. And of course, that's very true. Thank you, Michelle Obama, for When We All Vote and other such organizations.
Right.
But
and
I.
For- being Michelle Obama
and
becoming Michelle Obama.
I am becoming Michelle Obama,
right.
But the idea there was, well, what happens if you're already voting? Where can you easily engage yourself to become a more active member of society and further make a difference in addition to your voice? And so that's where the idea of Plus One came from, because, you know, if you're going to vote and you bring a plus one, someone
mm-hmm.
who wasn't going to vote, or, you know, just giving someone the opportunity, a drive to the polls or whatever it is, then you're doubling your impact and increasing voter turnout. And so that's how the idea started. But kind of what came about was like, whoa, I did not expect all of this avalanche, this outpour, this outcry of people who really supported the organization.
Yeah, that's wild. And then, I love hearing that it was really, like, you
mm-hmm.
and
yeah,
Roshan
me, yeah.
in Florida just,
yeah.
like, running this from the ground
mm-hmm.
and, like, making it all happen
yeah.
within the 2 weeks that you had before the election.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild. I don't know. Do you want to, like, what even made you take the leap of being like, oh, I'm a person
mm-hmm.
and now I want to be at this nonprofit
mm-hmm.
and make it into like a real thing? Like, I don't even know
yeah.
how I would go about that.
I think that what I realized from the process and from other projects that I've worked on, it's as simple as that, as how you exactly as you just put it, like, oh, I'm just a person and I'm going to do this thing.
Cool.
That's all it really takes. It takes that level of conviction of this is something I believe in, this is something that I want to do, and finding a team of people who support you in that goal, then that's all it really takes. You know, it doesn't, what else, it seems like still. It's really complicated from the outside.
Right.
You know, obviously there's like paperwork and filing for a nonprofit status and, you know, kind of conceptualizing your messaging and everything. But once you kind of get those bricks out of, once you lay those bricks or whatever that expression is.
Once you build from the bricks.
Yes.
I don't know. That's not it. Once you start becoming a brick builder.
Yes. Then you have a building, you know.
Then you build the brick.
Yes. And and so with that, you know, it kind of became these video projects. We partnered with Move On, a very progressive organization that really pushes for more progressive policy in the government and getting more people elected into office that are more representative of the democracy that we live in. They were one of our first partners. And, you know, our videos ended up being like retweeted by like Rosie O'Donnell and Padma Lakshmi, the Women's March, and, you know, all of these big, crazy things.
Classic.
Like, we were trolled by Jimmy Kimmel.
Wait, what exactly do you mean trolled by Jimmy Kimmel? Because
okay,
you have told me that, and I never clarified.
Okay, yes. So kind of what happened was, so Alyssa Milano, amazing actress, the actress who kind of launched or gave a lot of publicity to Tarana Burke's Me Too movement. So she made a video for Plus One. You know, she was like, this is my Plus One, and I'm calling out the mayor of LA to be my Plus One. Mayor Garcetti,
so like, are they pals, or is just it was like an ice bucket challenge call out from afar?
Essentially, you know, so that video got some traction, and then a day or so later Mayor Garcetti is like, oh hey Alyssa, thanks for that shout out. My Plus One is my wife, and I'm challenging Jimmy Kimmel
to bring a Plus One. Oh wow. Okay, so that's like a cool way to do it, instead
then,
of being like, oh, they're in the room and here's it.
And then Jimmy Kimmel kind of comes out, and you know, he just tweets out, my Plus One is the Lord.
Is Lord the singer?
The Lord.
Oh, the Lord.
The Lord, like God, like
I Lord the singer.
And so it's just like, oh my god, like how did this
you got God involved? Wow. That's okay, that's interesting. I'm confused. I don't even know, is that like supposed to be funny? I don't know if I get the joke, but I get that it's the Lord.
And so that was really cool, because it went
legit
from kind of, you know, me having this concept of Plus One to Alyssa Milano, Mayor Garcetti, Jimmy Kimmel
in your room, like building this from nothing to being like, oh okay, now God is involved.
I mean, it started with the belief, and when you believe, the Lord listens, right?
I guess that's how that works. Okay, so a little bit of background. I feel like we dove right into Plus One, but knowing you, like, for me, it's not a big surprise, because I know, I knew we've known each other since like before college, but like right before college, because we went to college together, but we met before, technically we were students.
Visiting weekend.
I was like visiting weekend, and obviously had to be pals, but also like so, you know, so impressed by like, I feel like my attitude too going in is like, oh my god, everybody's so impressive. You know, going into college, being like, oh my god, everybody,
look at all
like,
these accomplished
people. They're like all coming from different high schools, also accomplished, and trying to like play it cool. So I feel like you're one of those people, I'm like, this guy's way too cool, way too accomplished for me, but like I'm gonna pretend like I can roll with it. And then we became best friends, so thank god.
Ironically, I felt the same way about you. Stand-up comedian galore.
Anyway, but so then you've always been somebody who has really like made their own luck, take the initiative, make it happen, not necessarily like literally making it all for yourself. And so I use it as such an inspiration, because all the time, every time I see you, it's like IV of salt, like get that injection of inspiration, because it's cool also knowing that it's not like you're coming from, oh, like my dad's this guy, so literally I just like attached to the nepotism, or like, you know, you're all your cards are on the table. It's like, yeah, I know, well, one day we'll be those dads, but you know, it's like
you'll be one of those dads.
I'm gonna be a dad. But but yeah, you know, so it's not like there's, you are you, and it's like you're just making it happen. And not taking any sort of, oh, I guess I have to be on this in group in order for it to work out, or I have to be like already, I don't know, already plugged into things. Like, you meet the right people, you make it happen for yourself, and if you believe in a cause enough too, that gives you that juice. But anyway, so that's, I'm just meaning like, you're a regular person who came in here And, oh, you're not a regular person, you're sod. But you know what I mean? You came in here and was like, I'm going to make a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And this is the mission, and like market it a certain way so it's very clear mm-hmm. what it means. Get people to vote for a friend. And then we just had like the best midterms voter turnout in 100 and so many years or something.
And a 10-point increase.
And that was all you.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's so much about if you really believe in something, then I think it is your obligation to do something about it. Because if you don't, then you're kind of just waiting and expecting for someone else to do it. But if you really believe that something should be done a certain way and have kind of unique thoughts on whatever it is that you're trying to contribute to, how can you expect someone else to do that for you? You know, and I think our government is so much based on the idea that the people elected are supposed to represent our people, our ideas, our values, and the direction that we want to head in. And it seemed like with the 2016 election that things kind of went overboard in the other direction. A lot of people felt comfortable, like, oh yeah, like, you know, Hillary, every single poll projection is, oh, Hillary has like a 90 something percent chance of winning. And so people thought it was fine. They thought that if I don't go out to vote, someone else will. And the reality of it is if you don't take
all these
that.
Trump guys like loaded up their trucks. But yeah, right?
Yeah. And so with that, it was kind of like, well, you know, it's okay people vote Republican. I don't have anything against that idea. You know, I think it's important to have a diversity of thought in the government. Mm-hmm. But if you're not going out and putting your voice in that conversation, no one will listen to you. And kind of growing up from, like you were just mentioning, with my background, it was like, well, I didn't grow up with like a silver spoon or anything.
Silver spoon up your ass as they talk about it.
You know?
Like, yeah, or in your mouth or wherever the spoons go.
And so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, sometimes you can happen upon luck, but you can also create it yourself if you're really determined and you are just kind of like, you know, for me, I believe so much in the environment. And after seeing kind of the detrimental impacts of, you know, us walking out of the Paris Accord or tearing apart certain national parks and national monuments for development of oil or propositions to, you know, drill for oil along all our coastlines, which would decimate like tourist industries and local economies and just all of these things that are, whoa, why is this even on the table? Like, this was not even a thing that anyone was concerned about, but here we are like tearing it up and selling it to, you know, whatever like industrial lobbyists come our ways. And that to me was so shocking that I felt like if I could contribute in any way to turning the conversation around in the other direction, that was the best thing that I could possibly do with my time, given my value in the environment.
Wow. Yeah. And like, did you have a moment where you realized this is something that has to be done and like I can do that work?
Yes, for sure. Mm-hmm. My moment was actually the 2016 election. Mm-hmm. So right after I graduated,
hello. We were classmates.
Oh God, there's the nepotism, right?
Yeah,
uh-oh. Found it. finally.
We are the dads.
So after graduating, I moved to India for half a year. I was working with the Ashoka Trust for Research in Ecology and the Environment, ATRI, a big nonprofit organization in India that, you know, works exactly on what the title implies, environment and ecology. And I was working in collaboration with a project with USAID, which was based in the northeast of India, in the Himalayas, in a city called Darjeeling. Yes, where the tea comes from. Delicious.
Yes, exactly what you were thinking. Yeah, you got me some tea.
I did get you some tea.
Thank you. It was delicious.
Did you drink it all?
Yes, I did.
That explains why you didn't make me any.
I would have given it to you, but I gave you some cheap ass
water.
Earl Grey tea. Oh, and water. Yeah, yeah. If you want more tea, yes, I can wait for
please,
tea.
Please, no.
Non-Darjeeling.
Right. And so I was living there, working there, because I felt like after graduating from college, my degree is in environmental science and public policy. And I felt like, oh, you know, my family is South Asian. My grandmother was born in Darjeeling. I can go back here and make a big impact in these village communities that don't have access to clean water, electricity, sustainable forms of agriculture, especially in an environment where, you know, climate change is a sort of thing where we often talk about a 1 degree, 2 degree change by 2050, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that's an average. So some places are going to be impacted a lot more in that average. And when you go to the most extreme climates in the world, like Antarctica or the Himalayas, those places are going to be disproportionately impacted. And so living there, you know, those climate impacts, they're not something that's happening in 2050. They're something that's happening now, that if you ask the people about it, you know, they can say, oh, you know, these monsoon rains are drastically increasing. My entire field of food, the food on which I depend to live, has been washed away. Or, you know, it's the changing climate has brought in all of these animals now that are now these panthers and monkeys are raiding my fields. And this is not something that has happened before. And when seeing those kinds of things in real time happening, I was like, oh, wow, like I absolutely need to work on this sort of project. And so while I was there, I was working on that. I was doing a lot of photo, video kind of stuff as well, to kind of give a larger voice to these communities that are sort of forgotten in a lot of ways. But while I was there, that's when the results of the election came.
Ooh.
So to answer the first question, yes, I did send in an absentee ballot. I did.
Okay, yeah. You can stay.
But, you know, that election, that day, I stopped entirely. I was just like sitting on the floor, just kind of beaten down of, you know, how could we let this misogynistic, racist man who kind of was feeding on people's hatred get elected to government, you know? And when that happened, I was like, oh, I have to go back. You know, I didn't really know, you know, I knew I could make an impact in India and I still intend to, you know, work on projects around the globe and am, but when that moment happened, I was like, I need to go back to America, you know? So got a plane ticket, came right back and, you know, started hitting the ground running on working on projects that would, that I felt like would be able to address this larger national government debacle that we seemed to be going toward.
Totally. Wow. Yeah. And you did come back.
Right.
Yeah. And like, in Los obviously, Angeles. I don't, you know, and I didn't think that, I think we talked about this briefly, but it's like such a shame that now it's something that everyone has to think about, you know, even though some people see that as the silver lining of like, okay, well now we're all more aware. And like, now I know who the Secretary of the Treasury is, but it's like, I don't know, you know, like, cause it does mean that we're all kind of like, all right, well, we got to do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I mean, specifically you have like the skill set to really make a difference. Like, on top of all the, you know, environmental science knowledge and like policy knowledge, I feel like.
I mean, I think awareness is such a pivotal, essential thing when people are misinformed, right? So if we're in a world that like doesn't understand the very basics of climate science or, you know, of agriculture or of, you know, kind of these larger environmental industrialization, city planning kind of stuff, then yeah, you know, awareness is important to get people to understand the basic fundamentals that, you know, our education system is not doing the greatest job in catching up to teaching these more new conceptual based topics. But at the same time, you know, I think in general, society should be able to function and live normally of its own accord. You know, like, why do we have like high schoolers becoming like the forefront activists for, you know, talking about gun reform? And it's great and amazing and inspiring that, you know, we have these David Hoggs of the world doing this work. But at the same time, it's really tragic that, you know, we're robbing these kids of their childhood, that their motivation for doing this was, you know, their school getting shot up. That's so messed up. It's, you know, it's not something to, we should not applaud that those things are happening, that there have been over 300 school shootings this year alone, you know, basically one every single day, or not school shootings. There have been over 300 mass shootings in this country. You know, it's a shame. And then when our policy doesn't adequately address that, when it's just a matter of thoughts and prayers, you know, you know, you should think about it.
Okay,
you should pray about it.
We all have to like hike up our sleeves and like not go to history class and like fucking go march in the streets. Yeah, that's crazy. But here's another interesting thing. And now, I mean, you know, since we're on our stay positive grind I guess well, no, I mean, we all know that's going on, but I guess like I'm always fascinated with people working in environmental, you know, things that I think kind of have this almost apocalyptic cloud hanging over our head, like we do in general, but even working in a field specifically, you really know the numbers, you really know like the stats. I mean, you've been to the places where it's affecting, you know, what seems like something that should have happened down the line is happening today. So I'm just wondering, like, how do you cope with that? And like, how do you work in this field when there is so much of that sort of hanging over it?
Yeah. I think that that actually is part of the reason why I felt so compelled to not only work in the policy side of stuff that directly addresses these issues, but also work in the media aspect. Because, you know, you look at the media and it is so cataclysmic all the time, because that clickbait kind of, you have a lot of clicktivists out there.
Clicktivists, yeah. It's like, I'd rather click on the thing that's going to tell me I'm going to die.
Exactly.
Than the thing that's like, you're fine.
Yeah, right. And you know, the reality is, in a lot of ways, we're not fine. So that's not even an accurate story to tell.
Or, you're going to be okay for a little bit.
Right. And so it's like, for me, in all of that, it's like, oh, you know, by 2050, we will have more plastic in the ocean than fish, like by weight. I mean, you know, and then you see all these photos of like turtles with like straws up their noses, or you know, birds dying with their entire stomachs full of just like plastic, whatever. And that is horrible and negative. But the positive aspect of that is, it's not as though we can't change that. You know, it's all of this is so much done by industry and government that we live in and that we are functioning parts of. So I think that if we can get in the right rooms, if we can have the right conversations with the right types of people, then we can force them to change these things that, you know, in the short term might be more profitable for them, but in the long term are going to be so detrimental for the environment, right? That if you just make them aware of these sorts of statistics and show them longer term projections of impacts on their business and impacts of society, then I think a lot of the times people are willing to change. It's just that those people in power aren't necessarily thinking about that. They're more like profit, profit, profit. But when you get those people that are like planet, planet, planet in the room,
good words there.
Then you can start to drive the conversation in another direction. And in a lot of ways, the world at large is starting to move more toward that direction. And you have more and more countries banning single-use plastics. India, the EU, just recently, kind of taking a step back from these sorts of things and thinking, okay, we have to stop this. This is over. Now you need to innovate as a business. You know, if there's no catalyst for that change, then why would things change, right? They would just remain the way they are. And that's the positive aspect of it, is the reality that you can be that catalyst.
Ooh. You be the change you want to see in the world.
Thank you, Gandhi. Was it Gandhi who said that?
I think. Hopefully. I mean, he's a great...
He said a lot of good things.
He said some good quotes, so I believe that could be his repertoire. Yeah, I mean, that's cool. Do you think, like, do you genuinely believe that people can change?
I think I have to believe that.
Right, yeah.
You know, I think that at the very least, if you don't walk in with hope, if you don't have hope, you don't really have anything. You know, if you don't believe that you can push the conversation in that positive direction, if you don't even have that belief, then what would even motivate you to do anything? Yeah. Why get up? You know, just sit down and eat some ice cream, you know.
I like that one.
I mean, also do that. Like, I also do that.
Right. Have some time. Yes. Set aside hope for a second to eat some ice cream. I'm just kidding. Yeah. I mean, that's very inspiring. And I think it does take, like, such a specific mindset to work in certain fields that are change-based fields.
And I think it's also it's also about, you know, people can make small changes in their daily life that reflect these sorts of values. It's not like, oh, you have to go out, you have to start a nonprofit, to, you know, start like marching in the streets and, you know, like tearing down buildings, whatever, you know. Right. I don't think we all have to
tearing down plastic buildings. I mean,
they're starting to make those, actually, like making buildings, they're making like bricks out of recycled plastics.
Oh, recycled plastic.
I mean, yes, but that's, it's also good. Like, where have we, you know, how have we gotten here, you know? How much plastic are we that this is now a sustainable industry that
make a house out of this? Gathering it from like the fish homes and making it into human homes.
Right. And so it's like, you know, making small changes. So, you know, people often ask me like, oh, like, what can I do to, you know, what can I do to have a positive impact on the environment? It's like, okay, well, how about eating less meat? Because agriculture is one of the largest contributors to fossil fuels and to greenhouse gas production. So, you know, cutting
cow
down.
Farts.
Yes. Right. And so it's not like
farting cows. Laughing cows are okay, but farting cows, no.
Right. And so it's like, you know, I don't eat meat, but it's not like everyone has to not eat meat. It's like, you can just, you know, cut out that steak you were going to have for dinner once a week.
Like,
you know?
Like one fewer steak.
Yeah. And that will have like a monumental impact when everyone starts doing that. Or like, you know, don't drive your car there. Why don't you just walk? You know, like, we walked to brunch earlier today.
Oh, yeah,
like,
we did. You're welcome.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Yeah, fish is in the oceans.
But, you know, it does have a positive impact on that.
Totally.
And I think when people start making those smaller scale changes and businesses start seeing that, that, like, oh, you know, people are interested in, you know, more organic products, or mm-hmm. people are interested in a more healthy lifestyle, then that becomes more common, that becomes the standard, and then you push out the old way that ultimately damages the planet and the environment just Gradually. By virtue of you taking those actions in your own life.
Yeah, that's wild. Like, I remember, oh man, I just feel like when we were in elementary school, we did this thing that mm-hmm. was like, enter your habits, and then yeah. it calculates how many planets it would take if everybody lived life mm-hmm. like you. And yeah. of course, for like every American, it's mm-hmm. more than one yeah. planet.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then for certain, you know, mm-hmm. I grew up in a suburb mm-hmm. and like all these things had a computer, yeah. like freaking seven planets, bring mm-hmm. it on, right? So yeah, it's just crazy. But like reducing certain things still mm-hmm. helps, and knowing that like if everybody does yeah. that, then it does reduce mm-hmm. the number of planets that yeah. required to,
you know, and it's like
fund your life.
The reality is this, if everybody in this world of 7+ billion people lived the way Americans do, oh my god, like our planet yeah. would be doomed.
Right.
And that's not to say that these other...
Everybody has two microphones. It's a lot of microphones, yeah.
I mean, and it's not to say that people in other nations shouldn't have access to the same opportunities. They absolutely should. Right. But as a global collective, we all need to take a step back and say, what is really necessary? What is the most environmentally efficient, resource efficient way that we can get microphones to the people who want them?
You got know? It, got it. Yeah.
Rather than just trying to get as many microphones produced as possible, mm-hmm. advertise them as much as we can, you know, create them in a way that destroys industry and mines and local economies.
Oh, no.
And,
right.
Yeah, yeah. What have we done with these microphones?
Frickin' microphones. Here yeah. Everyone has a podcast, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's...
It requires like a systematic thinking, you know. I think that's, if I were to ask for people to do one thing, it's think about things more systematically. Like, how does this connect to everything else in the world? And, you know, I think that kind of grounds you in your actions, and that makes you more aware of the positive change that you can have by virtue of being not just an individual, but part of that larger global system.
Damn. Profound. But yeah, I mean, it's so hard not to just think about individual, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, wow, I really just am me.
Yeah.
And then I forget that I'm not just me. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but yeah, I guess like, I want to go off of that mm-hmm. and like thinking systematically, because yes. I know we talked about, you know, we talk all the time. So yeah, I'm BFF. Trying to parse what has been recorded and what hasn't. But I think like, yeah, specifically about, you know, thinking about the way that you approach projects mm-hmm. or approach life and yeah. stuff. Like, you're very thoughtful and careful person, and I think, well, what's fun, you're also a fun person.
Ooh.
So sometimes I can't always tell, because sometimes I'm like, Sod's so fun, it just like uh-huh. all happens. Mm-hmm. It's all like, ooh, Sod snaps his fingers and like, oh, and then everybody votes, you know. But obviously you put a lot of time mm-hmm. and energy into it. So I don't know, I guess like, what sort of things have you learned about planning mm-hmm. and I don't know, and about the way you approach life, because mm-hmm. I feel like you are such a positive, mm-hmm. fun presence. Mm-hmm. And how do you do it? Yeah. What are your secrets? What are your beauty? Yeah. What's your beauty regimen? Well, no, but okay, so your happy regimen.
I think that, first of all, I think a happy regimen is a really smart way of thinking about.
I just came up with that.
Do you host a podcast on being positive or something?
I don't know.
Because I think it's important to have that daily self-care in whatever form mm-hmm. it is, right? So for me, basically every day, like several times a day, I'll just have a cup of tea, like a cup of chai.
Yeah, you're a tea boy.
I am.
Not a coffee boy.
Yeah.
Right? No. Yeah, oh, get gosh. That coffee away from Sod. But yeah, you're a tea kid.
Yeah, and for me, it's just like this very cathartic, warm, welcoming thing. It reminds me of my childhood, of like my family culture, you mm-hmm. know. And just that in itself is just like a very cathartic experience. Even for me, something as simple as like brushing my teeth, like maybe this is weird, but I think that's like the most enjoyable thing.
It's like, kind of like meditation.
Mm-hmm. It's
people
like
people say,
yeah, it's this 2-minute regimented thing every single day.
You brush for 2 whole minutes. No, I'm just
kidding. Sometimes more.
Mm-hmm, yeah. No, that's good. You should. I feel like I always cut it short. And I'm like,
oh God.
Don't tell my dad. My dad does dentistry.
Yeah,
anyway.
Get Sierra some, you know, dentures for Christmas.
Oh no. I mean, whatever. Not like my teeth. Aren't dentures already
now. Oh my God.
They will be at some point.
Well, you know.
The future.
But, you know, just thinking about, it's almost ceremonial to kind of just like sit there. It's, what other time are you really just sitting there looking at yourself in the mirror? It's very weird, you know, it's like a very, and it's a very
that's
me
true,
thing
though.
To think of it in that way. But
oh,
I think just taking those small moments to yourself and taking them to really think about, like, what am I accomplishing? Like, what are my goals and how close to them have I gotten? Or if I'm far away from them, what can I do today? What can I do to own today to get me closer to that goal? By the time that I brush my teeth the next time tonight, I can look myself back in the eyes and be like, hey, that thing that you said this morning, you did it. You accomplished it. You know,
check that box. Do you feel like, so you set goals. Do your goals, are you generally like a goal person, or do you find that like sometimes you got to set those aside? Like, I don't know, because I feel like sometimes I was a goal person and then sometimes those goals were getting me down. So I needed to like not base too closely on goals. So I don't know. What's your relationship with the G word?
Okay. Yeah. Right. Well, I think that with when it comes to goals, it's important to have some sort of goals. Right. And they can be really vague as like, oh, by the time I'm 30, I want to have accomplished X, Y, and Z, you know, or that maybe that's not vague, that's more specific, but something at more, you know, like by tomorrow, I want to just like feel better than I did today, you know, like just something more simple.
Yeah, in that's a good one.
Yeah, right. Or, and there's lots of ways to accomplish that, right? So I think for me, I often tend to have these more vague goals of, oh, I want to increase, I want people to care more about policy. I want people to care more about the environment. That's the goal, right? And the way that I go about that on a day-to-day basis is, well, how do I accomplish that goal? You know, what can I do today to bring me closer to that goal? And, you know, sometimes that might be, oh, let me write, edit, produce this video. Let me write this article. Pursue this research project. Let me talk to Sierra a little bit.
And, Yeah, I see. So then it wouldn't necessarily be like the goal is to, maybe the goal kind of turns into subset of goals of like, complete the project, but then it's all kind of rooted in this bigger thing.
Because I think for me, it's important to have kind of, and I think maybe this should be a thing that people themselves do more, is rather than focusing on your goals, focus more on your set of values. If you have like a very clear, distinct set of values of like, this is important to me, then when people ask you, what do you do? Or, you know, what are you trying to accomplish? Or where did you come from? Where did you go?
I'm like, this sounds familiar. Right.
Then, you know, you kind of have a very clear answer of, oh, well, my goal is to protect the environment. You know, it's, oh, well, what does that mean? Oh, well, let me tell you about plastic pollution. Let me tell you about climate change. And then in that way, every conversation, a lot of the conversations you can have can gear you toward that. And you can start getting input from different people from different fields, whether they be comedians or, you know, or politicians or doctors or, you know, the barista making a latte for you.
Amazing.
You can get more people's perspectives on that.
Except you don't drink coffee.
Well, they'll get the chai latte.
Yeah,
yes.
I forget latte. Can also refer to tea. Anyway,
gotta bring those reusable mugs.
We didn't do that. Well, I did stir the coffee with a noodle.
You did stir the coffee with a noodle.
Than like a wood stick.
Didn't use any lids.
No lids.
Exactly. You know, there's like those small kind of changes that you can make.
You're welcome.
and so it's, if you have those values kind of set aside and really ironed out, I think what I found is people respect you more when you really believe in something. You know, if you're pitching a new project, then it's like, oh, well, this isn't, you know, just about me getting press and me getting awareness and my face out there. Like, if anything, I'm just the messenger or just like a channel through which it happens. This isn't about me. This is about this larger cause, this larger thing that I think is important. And I think that can translate to any industry, whether that's trying to make people be more, feel more positive and, you know, live more positive lifestyles. or, you know, whether it's about trying to make people live more environmentally friendly lives or, you know, think, be more conscious with their money or, you know, whatever line of work you're in. There's a reason people do it. There's a reason that industry exists.
Totally.
And generally that reason is to help people in some way. And so if you can tap into that, then, you know, I think we would be in a much better place globally if more people thought about the values behind what they were doing instead of just doing things blindly because they feel like they should or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And it's hard, but it's hard to lose sight of that. It's hard to stay within sight of that, and it's easy to lose sight of that. But that's a really good point. And I feel like you are such a, like, I love to hear what you're working on because it comes from a value point of view mm-hmm. rather than, I don't know, a money and it's point so funny of view. Because, I don't know. What else is there?
It's so funny because I don't even really talk about myself that much unless I'm like directly asked about it, you know, because otherwise I kind of just am working on it, you know, so I don't.
Yeah, you're like, I don't have time to talk. Yeah, what is it? It's like when people are like, when you're busy talking, I'm busy working. So one of those
because sayings. I'm also, like, you know, I think it's important to be a listener, you know, like if you, because I think so many industries, I guess because I think very systematically, it's like even if I'm talking to you and you're talking about, oh, I'm like writing this new show or I'm doing this podcast, you know, it's like, oh, well, how and why and with who and what are your goals and what are you trying to accomplish? Because then I can feed off of your energy, you know, and I think that's so much of why we're such good friends is when in that way I feel very invested in everything that you do. It's like, oh, what can I do to help? Or, you know, how can I, you know, how can... Because I feel like whenever my friends or my family succeeds, I also take that success in, you know. And in that way, I feel like we all kind of are moving through life together. And I think that's important to create that sort community. Of community, family
that's
unit.
That's a big buzzword I like. But yeah, for sure. I think it's so fun to hear from like our small friend group from college, say, or like
we have
other
a lot of
people.
Friends, but the group is...
Yeah, sorry. pretty exclusive. But yeah, no, I'm just thinking like... You know, our group text that we have going. Like, it's cool to hear everybody, you know, making big decisions or whatever they're doing. Maybe they made a big job move. Or they're, like,
new country,
starting a nonprofit or this or that. And, like, that is so cool because it feels like an extension of yourself. You're like, ooh, maybe I felt like I accomplished something today even though I did nothing. But Saad did something, so.
I was eating ice cream.
I was setting hope aside and eating ice cream. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, that's cool. I feel... the same way, like the minute you hit the ground so you're like Saad is literally here for like a layover but the minute you hit the ground we're already like chatting about everything and so then it's like, and I feel like I do this with myself where I'm like I'm thinking about it in my own head or maybe I'll talk to somebody else's ear off and I don't, not everybody appreciates it, you know, sometimes it's like, oh well, what do you about think about this sort of like work philosophy, and that's a lot of why, you know, I have this podcast because it's also like an excuse to be able to do that with a bunch of people, but specifically you're a person who I'm always constantly, you know, we can talk on the phone for hours about specifically like work philosophy or like, I don't know, I call it work philosophy, but it's basically life philosophy. Just like, okay, so then what's your approach to this? And like, what's an example of that? So anyway, but speaking of, because I did want to dip into your Al Gore story, if you're comfortable talking about it, because I think it's a good example or any story.
Well,
that's
on
similar,
what you were saying,
but that's a fun
I feel like it's so important to surround yourself with people who like pump you up. You know, like people who like...
Yeah, get that IV of sod juice.
Well, because I think especially for me, I kind of like, you know, this week alone, I was filming for a video series in the Grand Canyon. And then I was in Saguaro National Park with meetings with the National Parks Conservation Association. And now here I am in LA with you.
Oh, fancy, highlight. I'm just... as grand as the Grand Canyon.
Grander, the grandest.
Grandest. Thanks.
And, you know, then literally today I fly out to New York and then tomorrow I'll be at the United Nations, right?
Casual.
And casual. name drop. No,
that's Saad's hashtag. It's hashtag casual.
And, you know, and that's all after having come back just from this election, you know, and running that nonprofit. And so I feel like for me, it's important to have friends that are willing to have those long conversations with you about like, what do you do? Why do you do it? And because then I feel like as you go forward with each of these projects, everyone's like, oh, that's really cool. Like, how do you do that? Or did you consider doing this? And and then it makes you feel more normal doing it. Because I definitely talk to a lot of people that are like, oh, like, that's a lot. Like, why? You need to choose one. Why don't you just do one thing?
Right. And so it's better.
You need to focus, you know. And people are often like.
Yeah, you're like. Don't tell Saad to focus. But like, really? Some people have told you that? Interesting.
I mean, I feel like I get told all the time, like, oh, that can't happen. Like, you can't do all of that. And I'm like, no, you can't do all of that. I'm doing okay myself.
Interesting. Because, I mean, and sometimes I get that advice maybe about being like, be patient, you know, because sometimes I'll go around being like, well, how do I do this? And they'll be like, simmer down, chill the F out. Which I sometimes do need to take that advice from, especially from older people who have been doing it longer. Maybe I need to take a little humility pill. But then at the same time, I hear that voice too, where I'm like, well, if I just take everyone's slow down advice, I'm going to really be slow.
No, for sure. You know, and it's, I think a lot of people at the end of the day who do give advice unsolicitedly. It's like, well, you don't really know me. You don't know my work ethic. Sure. You don't know my experiences.
If it's someone you don't know, like, yeah, what the hell?
You know, and when it comes from a friend, someone who's really close to you and you have that tie with, then it's like, oh, well, whatever. That's why I value so much what my friends have to say. Sometimes I just go to them and I'm like, oh, I'm considering doing these things. What should I do? And, you know, just putting the entire decision
on them. Right, and I'll be like, do them all, Saad. The world is yours. Save us.
I mean, that's kind of when I graduated and went to India, that I went to you, I went to several of my other friends, you know, in college and was like, oh, I'm considering doing this, this, and this. Ooh, you know, what do you think I should do? What should I do after I graduate? And just letting them have the opportunity to put themselves in my shoes so that I could have the opportunity to hear these different perspectives of what people think of me that are really close to me and, you know, kind of what it seems like I should do as like that natural next step.
Cool.
And, you know, I had some friends when I had that conversation, they were like, you know, after you graduate, I feel like you're just going to live in some mountain somewhere. Or, you know, I feel like you are going to, you know, be in Washington, D.C. doing some sort of policy thing. Or I think, you know, I got all of these different varied answers and I was kind of surprised that people kind of tuned into different parts of what I was interested in heavily.
So you were like, what do you envision that I would be doing? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
And that was like a kind of fun way of getting feedback on me, you know, like I think that's important to go to the people that you value and ask for feedback on you because it's like, what can I be doing better as professionally or even just like as a person? Like, have I done anything that's upset you? And if so, tell me, how can I be better?
Saad, I have to tell you.
No.
You as a person, just not working out.
Yeah, start over again.
Right,
what are you
doing? You need to
go back to India. Birth. You should really.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what I came here to tell you. Like, I'll drive you to LAX, but you have to get a different flight.
Oh my God.
Just kidding. But okay, I see. That's great. Mm-hmm. And also, yeah, you are somebody who has a bunch of different things going on, but always has, and then like hasn't compromised on the like, oh, now I'm an adult. I have to pick one life, you know, game of life card and go with it for the rest of your life. Like, we're in a new time. You can do a lot of stuff. And you've like totally done that, which is so inspiring and like shows that we don't have to subscribe to things just because that's like what has been done.
At the end of the day, the only person who can limit you is you.
Write it down. Etch it in stone.
I mean, if you don't, you don't kind of, people often talk about like being empowered and, you know, being in communities that empower you, and that's important. But at the end of the day, you have power yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't tap into that power that you have as a person, as a free thinker, as a free agent, no one else really can. It starts with that belief in yourself. And from there, then other people will see that potential in you, and then boom, do whatever you want.
Yeah. And speaking of other people. I did want to bring up alcohol.
Oh my God.
But you don't have to.
Oh, please. This is, no,
it's funny though. And it's also, it's a good story. And it's also a good example of like, sometimes people think that like a lot of stuff happens behind the scenes. Maybe, you know, you knew somebody or blah, 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 blah. Or you can just like make it happen for yourself. But also, don't try this at home, kids.
Yeah. Oh God. Okay. Okay. I'll, okay.
All right. Begin story.
This
now
was such a funny thing. Okay. So senior year, Al Gore was coming to speak. And I was like, oh my God, Al Gore, like this like amazing environmentalist. Like, he's such an inspiration. He's done a lot to increase awareness about climate change and all these things, right? I was such a big fan of his nonprofit, the Climate Reality Project. And so I was just like stoked that he was coming. So first things first is I'm like, you know, who might be, and this, he was coming to speak at Sanders Theater, like the largest, like 3,000 or so people
it's
are
like
seated in there.
If there's going to be the most seated area that's indoors at the university, then it's going to be there.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was like, okay, he's coming. I wanted just like 2 minutes with him. I wasn't even sure what to do with those 2 minutes, but I was like, I need to just like see this guy. So I start by emailing every single contact, like the head of the environmental department and like all these professors and stuff, like, oh, like, do you know how this is happening? Like, seeing who's organizing this and, you know, like, can I get 2 minutes with the guy? And they're all like, oh, we don't even get 2 minutes with the guy.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like, sit, a classic, like, sit down and wait kind of advice, which, okay,
fair
enough.
And I was like, okay, sure. And then my my roommate, he used to work at Sanders Theater. And so he knew kind of the layout of the building and was like, oh, like, they'll probably, like, he'll come before.
The
yes, right. They'll probably put him in this room. So if you can, like, get access to that, like, you know, then.
You're going to kidnap Al Gore.
Right? I was like, oh, God, here's
it's
this, like,
heist movie.
Here's this brown guy, like, doing a heist for Al Gore. Is this, like, Ocean's 8, like, with the environmental,
no.
I don't know.
Yeah, except instead of diamonds, it's Al Gore.
perhaps more valuable, perhaps.
Ooh, what a compliment.
Oh. So I go there and I'm like all ready to like, you know, I know exactly where to go. But he ends up being like late, like really late, oh, because there was some sort of storm. He was flying in from New York, ironically, of course, climate change, right?
Like, yeah, and anything to prove your point more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he ended up driving up from New York to Boston. Mm-hmm. And so literally this like hall of like 3,000 people, everyone's just sitting there like waiting awkwardly for him to come. And so I'm like, okay, I saw two microphones in the room. And I was like, oh, there'll probably be like a Q&A period. Like, this is my chance.
Good. Collecting the context clues. You're straight up Nancy Drew. Mm-hmm.
And so I was right next to the microphone and Al Gore comes. Al Gore does his speech. Super inspiring. Amazing. You know, I was humbled to just like be in his presence and to like, you know, hear his like deep thoughts on really everything.
Cool.
And so... So then I go up to them, they're like, oh, and now is the time for the Q&A. So I like, you know, run to the microphone. And so I start by introducing myself to Al Gore. I'm like, oh, like, hi, Al Gore. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, is this Mills?
So you've already managed to address him through the microphone, which is, mm-hmm, for a lot of people, that'd be enough. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I was like, here's my moment to shine.
Yeah.
And, because it was kind of like, I was also like, is this Mr. Al Gore or Vice President Al Gore? Like, I don't know. Like,
Vice
how do you.
Yeah,
yeah. I guess. Yo, Al, how you doing?
Yeah, like, hey, Allie G.
And, okay, so I'm like, hi, my name is Saad. I'm studying environmental science and public policy here. I also do a lot of work in photography and production. And I'm a really big fan of your nonprofit, the Climate Reality Project. And he's like, oh, wow, like, thank you. And he was really excited because he didn't even mention that in his
speech.
Right,
ooh, good, good, you know, deeper cut,
right,
I suppose.
Exactly. he was like, oh, wow, like, that's really interesting. I was like, yeah, like, I'm such a big fan. Like, actually, I think that you should hire me.
You say this in front of 3,000 people in Al Gore. That is so funny. Wait.
And literally in front of me was like this seating area of maybe like 200 incredibly distinguished professors who all like turn around like, who is this kid? Like, who, what is happening? Like, they're all jaws on the floor. Just like, what is happening?
Yeah, like, welcome to Saad, everyone.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And so then Al Gore is like, oh, you know, well, we do need people. Mm-hmm, yeah. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, uh-huh. Do you have an actual question, though? I was like, yes, of course. So you know that I follow up with this question about Chai Jin, who had at that time just put out this kind of the Chinese equivalent of An Inconvenient Truth, which is a documentary won tons of awards that Al Gore did that raised a ton of awareness for climate. And so she kind of did her version in China. It went super viral before that kind of got struck down and you know, stopped being shown in China. But it did raise a lot of awareness for, you know, just like seeing skies in China go from blue to gray and kids there, the woman who was the host of this, her own kid not realizing that the sky is supposed to be blue. The world being in that state. So I asked a question about that. Al Gore, you know, shines as he always does. And you know,
like,
so then
the diamond he is better than diamonds.
Like the diamond I was trying to steal.
Right.
And so then, you know, I'm like, okay, like, how, what do I do? How can I see him? So I'm like, okay, I know the blueprint.
So even
right?
after that, you got your question in, you asked him for a job.
Yes.
And you're like, I still need more. I need more Gore. I still need more Gore.
There's not enough Gore for me.
Yeah. Gotta keep goring.
Right. So then I, after that, I'm like, okay, you know, this is the Q&A. After me, maybe there's one more question and it's over. So I'm like, okay, where's he going to go? Because obviously he's going to leave. He's not just going to like chill here. I knew that I was like, okay, he's probably going to go to this like back exit to like this like parking lot, like jump in his car and just like drive away. Right. And so I kind of walk out and I go toward that parking lot and there I see like a black car with like guards around it. I'm like, well, okay, obviously like he's going here.
Yeah.
And then, as I'm like walking toward that, lo and behold, he walks around the building. And so it's like, it's the car is behind me sort of. And then there's me. And then a little bit further away from me is Al Gore. And then behind Al Gore is like a mob of people.
Right, all the
trying...
people who did not smartly circumvent the situation.
You know, kind of trying to talk to him or whatever. And between Al Gore and that mob of people is like all these guards protecting the former vice president of the United States, right?
Yeah, his detail.
But between Al Gore and I is nobody. right? Mm-hmm. So he's just walking straight toward me, toward his car, but you know, toward me.
But basically, you.
he wanted to really talk to me. So I go like, "Oh, hey, Al Gore," and I like reach out with my resume, and you know,
you knew to print your resume out before mm-hmm. going, yeah, because oh, yeah. you're not. An amateur. Well,
I was going to meet him in the basement of this building before he went up to speak. Right.
So you were like, I need that hard copy.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So this whole thing kind of, you know, updated that, you know, highlight all the environmental experience.
Right, yeah, make sure you adjust that shit to him, man.
Customize.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, as I reach my arm out, all his guards like flinched, like, oh my God, like just like protecting this man. Right. And he's like, oh, you're the one who asked the question. And I was like, yes, that was me. And he like comes up to me, he grabs my resume. He's like, oh, this is so great. Like, I'll take a look. Like, thank you so much. Jumps in his car and then like drives into the sunset.
Right. I'm floored.
And I'm just like shook. I'm just like, oh my God, like that.
You made it happen.
Yeah.
Again, taking, you know, being the change.
Well, because it's the kind of thing where, you know, I realize that if you don't capitalize on these opportunities, or it wasn't even an opportunity. In a lot of ways, you have to create the opportunities.
Right. No, that was in no way was it sod, you have an opportunity. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you created it.
Yeah.
And that's why I like that story so much, because mm-hmm. it's not as if it's like, oh, well, you know, you had an in because so-and-so and so-and-so are your buddies or whatever.
It was just like, I was so inspired by this man, by his work, and mm-hmm. by the change he created in the world. And I was like, oh, like, I just wanted a minute with the guy, you know, and I was like, I didn't even totally know what to do with that. And so by thinking through kind of the strategy of how do I accomplish this kind of goal of increasing environmental awareness? Well, oh, here's this guy who
that's
who he is. Uh-huh. And that to me was just such a meaningful moment, because even after that, so I did end up getting in contact with his Time and Reality project, and so that was like super exciting, like emailing back and forth, and then I ended up in India and worked on another project.
Oh well, you're back now.
Yeah, right.
So Al Gore, if you're listening, and or anybody from Climate Reality Project, hook that shit up.
Please tweet.
Sod is on the market again.
Yes. Well, I'm always looking to collab with.
Right,
Al Gore.
Al Gore.
Yes.
Yeah.
Always on the market to collab with Al Gore.
Right. Yes. Right. Always open to little Gore. But that is.
And so now for me, it's such a thing where it's like, you know, talking about specific goals. Now, one of my specific goals is I would love to work with him on a project and be able to further that goal of increasing awareness of the climate and of not just of like climate change is real. You know, so much of the conversation focuses on like, is it real or is it not? It's like, it's real.
Waste of time.
I'm not even going to sit here and tell your very intelligent audience that it's real. Like, it's real. but more like, what are the strategies that we should use to kind of pursue this? Is it like a carbon tax? Is it more like policy-based stuff on like reducing emissions? There's like lots of ways that we can go about creating these changes that we kind of want to see in the world. But talking about that and, you know, furthering the conversation in a more productive way, globally, that, you know, I think that we can systematically come together and really solve this issue, and I want to do that with Al Gore.
Beautifully said. Yeah, I agree that everything might be maybe like, it's just kind of, it's exciting to work with somebody who inspires you and who's like kind of on the same mission, but also it's like, it's also to a common value, right? Yeah. And like going back to your values and stuff, like that's on brand, which is amazing. But yeah, I just love that story, because I think it is all about like, oh yeah, that's like a thing that basically was created by you, and that's inspiring. Rather than, you know, we love to hear the stories of like, oh, like, you know, somebody getting lucky and like winning something, or, you know, and that's cool, whatever. But that feels,
I mean, even
like a
even the project in India was, you know, I got in contact with the head of the organization. We met up for coffee or tea, chai.
Yeah,
latte, chai
latte. Screw chai coffee. Sod. I love coffee. Sorry.
I feel like I should do like an ASMR drinking chai latte. Just like, chai latte. You know.
Yeah, I mean, that's there's a big market there. Probably. I think you could definitely make that.
And and you know, just like getting in contact with him, and it was like, he had a goal of, you know, increasing biodiversity and like climate change and all of these environmental issues, and so did I. And especially at that time, I was like, oh, I want to be able to communicate these. I want to like work on projects that are doing this. And he's like, oh, we're starting to work on this stuff in the Himalayas. Like, come, just like come. You know, I was like, what? He was like, yeah, like literally just like come on a luggage ticket. We're just going to go and we're going to do this. And I was like, oh, And it's like Dr. Kamal Bawa, this like incredibly renowned environmentalist, mm-hmm. And now getting to work with him on that sort of project, it was just like, wow. Like, I mean, he's published so many books. That, you know, but that kind of thing wasn't like, oh, we're looking for someone to come with us to India. You know, it was like, no, I wanted to go. So yeah, I was looking for the people that were working in that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, because we did talk about the fact that it is the more romantic story to be like, and then, you know, I was just walking down the street and somebody like was like, do you want to go to India? And I was like, yeah. And then everybody's like, oh, that's like a great story to tell on like Jimmy Kimmel. Yeah. And it's like, yeah. But so often that's kind of glossing over a lot of things that are like deliberate and less sexy and like, yeah, whatever, I guess. It's not as cool to be like, oh, and then I like emailed this person and they CC'd this person and then I followed up on Thursday. Like, that's like not as like concise and fun for Jimmy Kimmel Live. But
and for me, like, it's like
the reality
at the end of the day is like, if there's this mutual goal of accomplishing social good and social welfare and benefits to society, then, you know, it's like people are so down to get together and work on that kind of stuff. If you're the type of person who genuinely has value in it and who genuinely puts their time toward that.
Yeah, and you're like, how can I help you? And like, that's
because it's already... like me helping you is helping this cause. And that's the goal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How can I help you help this cause? Is that a saying? Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what's so cool about you is like seeing the things that come about, you know, your own proactiveness and proactivity, I don't know. But anyway, so that's great. But before we finish, I did want to ask like the standard questions of that I normally ask on the podcast. One is, you know, have you had a high moment or a low moment? And if so, what are they?
Yeah. I think for me, in the way that I approach life, I feel like our system of happiness is broken. It's so much derived on...
another one we should write down.
Well, because our happiness, the idea of happiness is it's something that you achieve or you accomplish. But any time that anyone's ever been happy, they've then subsequently been unhappy. So does that make the happiness that you had less legitimate? Or, you know, if happiness is a goal, it's not really a state that you can ever permanently be in. And so given that, it's like, well, these highs and lows are just sort of a fact of life, right? Like sometimes these projects will go really well, or sometimes they'll go really poorly, or sometimes there's issues with family or friends or whatever. I just think that's just the reality of life. So I don't necessarily let those things bring me up or down, you know? For me, the core tenet of it all is to just have that sort of hope and faith that things are good, things are fine. Like that to me is the high point, is... Or not, you know, if like people are living on a scale of like a zero being absolutely miserable and a 10 being, I'm so happy. You know, I think I would much rather be somewhere balanced in the middle most of the time rather than fluctuating up and down, because to me that's exhausting. You know, like how many times can you go through that same cycle and take those punches again and again and again, right? Like, and of course there's like a sort of perseverance to that. But to me, I try and just keep myself more balanced. And so when we look at happiness as this sort of destination, I don't think it is a destination. It's kind of something that you always have the potential to be content with you, but you don't always have the potential to be like over the moon happy. And you know, and then you start getting into like comparing your happiness to other people's happiness, or, you know, comparing the happiness that you had from this success to the happiness that you had from some other success. And does that trivialize the happiness and success that you have? And then you start to get in the weeds of being happy or feeling guilty about being happy. Like, should I be sadder? Or, you know, I know these people that are sad. To what extent am I responsible for that?
And like, oh, like this relative sort of, lifestyle of happiness.
And so I think it's much more complicated than the paradigm that we kind of are in now of, when I just want to be happy. Like, that sounds nice on the face of it, but can you define happy for me? You know? Because I think that it's not a universal trait or quality. And so, you know, you like, I want to be a doctor. That's a very defined, like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to accomplish. But something like, I want to be happy is so esoteric that if that's what we're going for, it's like, well, take a step back. Tell me what that actually means to you. And then figure out the way to accomplish that. Because I think that is actually much more meaningful than just being happy.
Wow. I feel like I have to redo all my podcasts.
Well, you know, but
no, but yeah, that's
for
so
me.
True.
That's kind of just the system that I work in, because I otherwise would just like get exhausted of just constantly feeling like that wear and tear on my body and my soul and my mind. Yeah. And so just, you know, being balanced, having a cup of tea. One kind of Buddhist quote that I kind of live by is, when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm sleepy, I sleep. That's like the yeah. whole, oh, that's wow. the, whole, you know, uh-huh. it's just like, don't just do something for the sake of like, you feel the pressure to do it.
Right.
Like, just, oh yeah, like this is what I feel like doing. To... This is what feels right. Mm-hmm. Do that. Why is it that complicated, you know? And then it's like, oh, I'm hungry, so I ate something, and now I'm full. You know, like now I'm content. It's like, okay, yeah, problem solved.
Yeah, it's like, you know?
It's not like it's 6 o'clock. I have to go and get my dinner right, and eat like 18 grams of protein or whatever
Soylent.
It is. That is like sure. so exhausting for me. You know, it's like, oh, you know, I want to wake up, have a cup of tea, brush my teeth, and you know, get to work on these projects that I'm really passionate about. And that's what happiness looks like to me. That's what being content every day looks like for me. And you know, sometimes it gets me to be able to do these fun things and travel and like, you know, live that Instagram life.
Right, also Instagram,
follow me at It's Not a Mirror.
Yeah. Where can they find
but you know, then yeah, that's all cool, and that looks more like what people think happiness should look like. But happiness is not universal. Happiness is personal. Happiness is very personal. And I think everyone should take time to reflect on what that happiness means to them. Mm. Maybe when they brush their teeth tonight.
Oh my God.
Or when they register to vote.
Yeah, yeah. Put that back in as well. But yeah, wow. I mean, that is just all brilliant stuff. I love so many of those things. And luckily we recorded it so I can play it back for myself anytime I need a reminder. Yeah. But wow. Okay. I love it all. And I like literally think that's where we end, because, you know, you covered literally everything I would have asked to, like definition of happiness, or also, yeah, how, like, what are your cheer up mechanisms, mm-hmm. which we
yeah.
know about the tea. Yeah. We know the tea secret. Yeah. But that's great. So I guess what is another way mm-hmm. to end too, is like, where can people find you mm-hmm. and follow what you're working on?
Yeah, I think, oh God, it's always funny, because I think people generally are like, oh, like, how can I follow all your projects? It's like, well, each of those projects have their own like media game going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, right. Or, you know, or specifically, but, you know, what think, projects you want people to follow right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think for me, if you want to be able to follow kind of what I do on a day to day and kind of the places that I go and the projects that I work on, my Instagram is the central
location. It is, I swear by it, the yeah. Instagram to follow.
Oh, goodness.
I love to show off to my friends. I'm like, oh, this is Saad. He's my friend. Oh, and gosh. Look at his Instagram.
And for those of you haters, you can like scroll down. You will see pictures of Sierra. They don't actually know each other. No, we do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I see. Because we don't like feature each other. Yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, if, you know, because I feel like a lot of times it's like, oh yeah, we're such great friends. Like, ha ha ha. We like, no, it's like, well, you know, you're an interviewer and you've said this with like 100 hosts
that
you people
like. I mean, yeah, this one's legit, but everyone else that I interview, not a friend. No, I'm just kidding.
So yeah, at It's Saad Amer, ITSSAADAMER. And yeah, because I think that it's important to not just do the work that you do, but let other people understand, like, how did you do that? Because I think oftentimes people are competitive about the way that they're doing things, and they want the success, and they want the award, and they want the accolades. But it's not about that. It's if the goal is the values, if you're trying to do something for the value that you genuinely believe in, then anyone who has that value should be your ally.
Sure, yeah, on your team. Mm-hmm. You divorce it from your, like, ego.
Kind yeah. of. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not about ego. It's about the planet for me.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
and then I guess you can also find Plus One
at Plus One Vote on Facebook and Instagram, Plus One _ Vote on Twitter. Nice. Someone had that handle. I don't know.
Yeah.
What can you do?
We hate them. They don't share our values. Get out of here.
But yeah, you know, and then now I'm working on a couple other projects, a video series, some podcast stuff, some book stuff, some research stuff, a lot of things
a lot
in
of
the
things.
Works.
Okay.
But you know, I like to keep busy. I like to be working on a lot of different projects, and hopefully they mean something to someone, and hopefully it encourages other people to do the work. And if it doesn't, you know, I'm doing the work myself. So
then get out of here. Yeah, all right. Right. Well, thank you, Saad.
Of course.
Have a lovely day, everybody.
Thank you, Sierra.
Bye.
Bye.